Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
veteran inventors. So this is from Rivelet magazine and Australian made. With the careers in the Navy behind them, Sydney veterans Darren Strubach and Ryan Carmichael are now building the next generation tactical watercraft that provide optimal performance and protection. A story by Luke Ryan. After 24 years of dedicated service in the Royal Australian Navy, Darren Strubach knew one thing for certain. It needs better boats. If you look at the rigid hull inflatable boats, says Darren, the hull design hasn't really changed in the last 30 years. And now they can't cope with the tactical and technological demands of modern operations. These are the issues Darren has experienced firsthand working as a Navy clearance diver and then a mine clearance diving officer. Darren spent much of his professional life on rough seas in bulky and difficult to maneuver inflatables. I was always putting my hand up to be part of a boarding team, so I was exposed to lots of different tactical watercraft, and they all had the same problems. As the missions stacked up, so did the incidents. In one, a pair of sailors under his command capsized in rough waters during a man overboard exercise. Luckily, we recovered them from the water. But it was a difficult rescue, and both ended up discharging 6 months later. Another recovery operation Darren was part of went horrifically wrong when one of his closest colleagues was crushed between an inflatable and a large merchant ship, fracturing his vertebra. Our tactical craft couldn't have enough power or steerage to cope with the swell, he says. It ended his career instantly. Years on, he's still struggling in his physical and mental rehabilitation. The incidents were a wake-up call. Darren took a sabbatical to research the problem and discovered the same issues were presenting themselves in navies all around the world. That's when I knew we had to do something about it, said Darren. Knowing the importance of working with like-minded, dedicated people, Darren reached out to a friend and fellow Navy officer, Ryan Carmichael. The pair had deployed together on and off since 2010 in the ADF Special Operations Command, first as part of the 2nd Commando Regiment Tactical Assault Group and then later as HMS Waterhen, the Navy's lead establishment for mined warfare. In early 2019, they both left the Navy to pursue civilian careers. Here we go. Ryan, by his own admission, wasn't coping well with the transition to civilian life. Quote, I managed to find a good job, he says, but it wasn't giving me the purpose in life I'd had in the whole career. Darren recognised I was looking for something more meaningful, so he came to me with a proposition. To Ryan, the idea immediately made sense. A veteran of Somali anti-piracy missions, he had been part of the high-risk boarding operations where teams had forced to split up because the boats we were using could no longer handle a full deployment. Are you coming out, hun? We've retrofitted these old boats so far beyond that they were built for the very time one. You fix one problem, you introduce another safety or performance issue. Every mission needs a name. An assembled on a whiskey project, a nod to their 2nd Commando Water Platoon, whose operations go back by the call sign Whiskey. They began to design process for the first watercraft, the Whiskey Alpha 8-5, with a simple guiding principle, the protection of personnel above all else. We knew it all began with the boat hull. The rigid hull inflatable boats were game changers when they first arrived, but they're no longer fit for purpose. Board the unwieldy and deep V-hulls of the old technology watercraft produce bone-shattering slam loads while saturating the unfortunate servicemen and women inside. We could talk for days about some of the horrible boat rides we've endured, says Ryan. 3 hours on a small boat holding on for dear life while your back and kidneys get smashed about freezing because you've been sprayed by every single wave. By the time you arrive at your mission, you're exhausted, so the equipment's been bashed up and your radio isn't working because it's covered with salt water. We figured that that if we could get people to the insertion point in a significantly better state, then our mission is accomplished. Darren and Ryan reached out to a team of American maritime engineers who were pioneers in new hull intended for dramatically reduced watercraft slam loads. They also have air entrapment tunnels that provide a cushioning effect, reducing the slam loads of 40% and creating smoother, flatter ride through the water. This means fuel efficiency is better, your transition time is faster, fatigue load and equipment and personnel is reduced. Once they had their foundation, they began to add components on a strict as-needed basis. We didn't just tick off a wish list that everyone wanted. Any element we added, we did so in order to maintain the delivery operational effectiveness and efficiency. The 8.5-metre deck is entirely modular, so seats, the equipment can be shifted in and around as submission requires. The cockpit contains state-of-the-art plug-and-play console that can be configured for weapons, communication, combat data systems, or any combination thereof. The raised gunnels offer, what they are, shield from spray, an opportunity to arm the boat while the console and seats are suspended to offer even more protection from the crew and equipment. We've created greater payload capacity and better performance than the existing Special Forces 11-metre rig, about a third of the weight and comparable in cost. While eventually what have hopes of selling Whiskey Alpha 8-5 worldwide, right now the focus is on the Australian Defence Force. It's very important to us that the Australian that this is an Australian concept. Oh God, there you go. Almost all the American the military craft being used by the ADF are foreign by design or manufacture. This is our chance to develop a wholly Australian fit for purpose military capability. The Whiskey Alpha 8-5 is currently at the final stages of optimization with trials planned throughout the year. Darren and Ryan speak frequently about the importance of building the values-driven company, one defined as much by its culture as its product. The transition from the ADF to industry can be very daunting for personnel, said Darren, particularly if you're not surrounded by people who have similar experiences. We carried a set of certain values all throughout our defence career, and it's utmost importance to us that we work with people who share them. As the Whiskey Alpha 8-5 heads towards production, we're hoping they'll be able to bring even more fellow veterans aboard. It's a no-brainer for us. We know that the ADF personnel have the same values, the same mindset and motivation. They come to work with the right attitude. Ryan adds, our purpose is never to just build a better boat. As always, there's a genuine mission to make a difference to those personnel who are risking their lives and serving on small tactical watercraft. It isn't hard to find a team who wanted to be part of that. This looks like a motorboat. So the air conditioning sounds interesting. And just read this. A day to remember. How we commemorate Anzac Day has changed over time, with its origin, structure and purpose debated almost right from the very beginning. Story Craig Tibbetts. The Anzac splashing of sword in Gallipoli 25-1915 could be not have imagined how the story would become the stuff of legend at the anniversary would lay claim to being a national day. The 8-month campaign was ultimately a failure, resulting in 180,000 Allied battle casualties, including most 11,500 Australians and New Zealanders dead. Though heavy losses were to come from the Western Front, Gallipoli had a profound effect on the two countries. In many ways, is seen as the baptism of fire, which the Anzacs had proven themselves the trial battle and shown the national character. When the war broke out in 1914, there were no national days. Empire Day was relatively new and had gained a broad acceptance. Anniversary Day existed, but would not be in place nationwide as Australia Day for another 21 years. Likewise, New Zealand's Waitiki Day wasn't officially observed until 1934. However, within months of Gallipoli landings, a special day to honour the Anzacs had been created. first held on the 30th of July 1915 and called Australia Day. It included fundraising support for wounded soldiers, recruiting drives, a variety of parades, pageantries, entertainment. In October, 8-hour day was simply repurposed as Anzac Day in South Australia. Again, the old amalgam of military and civilian marches and carnival, Adelaide Oval and Shoed. These early attempts at Anzac Day showed a confused mix of purpose, emphasis and tone, and none was tied to April 25th. From the very outset, there was conflict over which day should it be. It was largely thought the efforts of Canon David Garland, who served as a military chaplain in World War I, and the interface committee he led in Queensland, the Anzac Day became what we know today, a sombre liturgy with hymns, prayers, a commemorative address, and a two-minute silence, the last post and reveille. It's two-minute silence, isn't it? It's 1 minute silence. Two-minute silence isn't amazing. But it's amazing why it was invented by a priest. During 1916, Garland championed this religious yet non-sectarian approach, which also sought to do away with things such as celebratory commercial nature. He successfully pressed his view upon other states to gain a national acceptance of Anzac Day in this mould to be held on the 25th of Ambry. The very first anniversary of 2016 was marked in Australia among these lines, yet among the troops still serving overseas, things were different. In Egypt, the anniversary was a mix of commemorative service followed by an afternoon sports and entertainment. In London, some 2,000 Anzacs marched through the crowds of spectators to a service at Westminster Abbey. By war's end, Anzac Day was widely observed in both Australia and New Zealand in recognition of the official public holiday, followed slowly as and was in place by 1927. That year also reputedly saw the origin of the dawn service in the Centre Path in Sydney, but claims to early ones in France, Albany, Rockhampton and Toowoomba during the war years have since persisted. Despite the broad general acceptance of Anzac Day by the 1930s, battles continued over what it should represent and some questions remained. Should it be more about veterans or should it be catered for the wider public too? Should it be religious or entirely secular? Then there was the question about the trade and entertainment that should be allowed. Over time, compromises were made and veterans got a sort of day they wanted. Ultimately, it was their day, first and foremost. The first half contained a formal solemn proceedings, the dawn service, the march and hymns and addresses. The afternoon gave it to reunion a chance for veterans to catch up, have a few drinks and play two up. Such as Anzac Day, we now know. The popularity has waxed and waned over the years. As the public opposition to Vietnam War grew in the 1960s, Anzac Day attendance declined. War and military were not popular. This continued throughout the 1970s and through the 1980s. Protests against the war and conscriptions, against the horrors and excess of war, distracted attention. Yet, a general rise in interest in Australia's military history during the 80s and the landings of the 70th anniversary in 1990, Australia Remembers campaign in 1995, were important milestones in the resurgence of Anzac Day attendance figures. John Howard was more instrumental in the revival after he became Prime Minister in 1996. The Centenary in 2015 saw unprecedented crowds in the Australian War Memorial in Canberra, reaching 120,000. For the dawn service and 30,000 for the national ceremony. New Zealand people likewise turned out record numbers, an estimated 20,000 for the dawn service in Wellington and 34,000 in Auckland. Veterans and their families, the traditions of Anzac Day, honouring service and remembrance of lost comrades remained sacred. Anzac Day's origins were contested and debated right from the beginning. Its demise has been predicted twice, but perhaps more than ever. For many Australians, Anzac Day remains Australia's de facto national day. Another podcast, another story comes to a close.
It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.